from Edgware, not always easy. Oh, sorry, Burren Woods, isn't it? Torreway, Northwest London, Thursday, Tanis Esther, 25th of February, Rav Yehuda Baruch Lieberman Shlita, Purim under lockdown.
We're all wondering what Purim is going to be like. It'll be different to other years. And the question is how to have Purim under lockdown without locking down the Purim. The truth is Purim is always a little bit of an enigma. We're told on the one hand, the Arizal says that when the Arizal saw the words Yom Kippurim in the Chumash, he said Yom Kippurim. There's a day that's like Purim. Yom Kippur is like Purim. So Purim is somewhere up on a pedestal, and Yom Kippur is like Purim. We all know what Yom Kippur is like, and we all know what Purim is like. How are we meant to understand a comparison at all between Yom Kippur and Purim, and certainly somehow putting Purim higher than Yom Kippur doesn't seem shayach at all. There's a famous Gemara. The Gemara says in Shabbos that the Maimed HaSinai, the Rebbein Shem, took the mountain and Kofa Haleim Har Kigigis. The Rebbein Shem held the mountain of Klal Yisrael and he said to them, if you accept the Torah Mutter, if you accept the Torah then you'll live Vim Lav, but if we don't accept the Torah Shom Tehei Purashem, they can be buried there in the Midbar and nothing will become of them. Accepting the Torah, and the Rebbein Shem forces us to enter the Torah. The famous Kasha, Tosfos asks the Kasha, is what's Pshat? I mean, the Rebbein Shem has to force us, didn't we say Nasa V'Nishma? One Shiloh. But why would the Rebbein Shem want to do that? What's the value of forcing people to accept the Torah if they don't want to accept it anyway? And we know the Gemara continues and says that there was a kofa leim har kigigis tatas, you know, and that led to a moidor rabba loy reis mikan, moidor rabba loy reis, how exactly translate moidor, but there's some weakness in the Kabbalah Satira. There's some excuse that Klal Yisrael can turn around and say, yeah, we're mekabel the Torah, because you had this mountain hanging over us, that you forced us to be mekabel the Torah, there'll be a lack of the feeling of chiyuv towards Torah. Kofa leim har kigigis, we were forced. But says the Gemara, when it came to the times of Achashverosh, Hodo Kiblu Abimei Achashverosh, in the times of Achashverosh, after the whole story with the Megillah, then Klal Yisrael accepted the Torah, and the Megillah says, Kimu V'Kiblu Aleim V'Al Zahrom, it doesn't just refer to the mitzvah of Purim, it doesn't just refer to the Hidah of Purim, Kimu V'Kiblu refers to the Kabbalah of the whole Torah again. Klal Yisrael and the Kabbalah Torah again in the times of Achashverosh. When you think about it, Klal Yisrael at the time of Matan Torah, they'd been through Yetzias Mitzrayim. They'd just seen 10 Makkos. They'd been through Kriyas Yamsuf where they saw Ras HaShivcha Alayom Mashal Eroi Yecheskel Ben Buzi. They'd experienced remarkable, remarkable Nisim. And then they went through Har Sinai. There was a Matan Torah. And they're coming, Moshe Rabbeinu's taking them to the mountain, and you need a kof aleim har kigigis and moidor rabba loy reisa. Whatever that weakness is, but how is it that generations later, after Yiridus Hadiris, and another Yiridus Hadiris, and the Beis Hamikdash has been Chorof, and that Shvala Madrega, they're in Golus, they're out in Bovel, they've lost their home closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's been so many Yiridus. And you're going to tell me now all of a sudden there's a greater and a hechre Kabbalah. It just seems such a strange thing. The answer lies in understanding the Megillah, the message of the Megillah, and the chiddush of Megillah's Esther. The Gemara says that Esther is seif kol alayla, because Esther is seif kol anisim. There's something about this nest that's it stretches nest right to the end, right to the chiddush, the maximum chiddush of nest. And we know that the reason is because whereas Matan Torah reflected the tkufa of Nes Nigla, of Nisim, that showed clearly that there was a Bore Olam. Esther wasn't a Nes Nigla at all. It's a Chiddush Bechlal that we call Megillas Esther a Nes. I'm sure there were many at the time, and probably many since. We've said, it's a Nes is meant to be like a banner, something you hold up high, and it shows you can't miss it, so clear. So when the Rebbein Shem does a Nes, normally we understand it reflects the fact that there's a Rebbein Shem here, you can see clearly before your eyes there's a Rebbein Shem. And Megillas Esther, what, there was a queen, and there was a Ahasuerus, and there was a Haman, and there was, you know, some type of a plot. It makes for a wonderful story. And the king thought that Haman was plotting, and Mamela, because he had that theory, therefore he saw everything from that light, and he got rid of Haman. It's only when a person looks close at the Megillah, a person takes time to learn through the Megillah, that you start seeing the Seder, the Chiddush, the way the Rebbein Shlom ran everything until the Vanapi Chuash Yishlutu Ayyudim Heima B'Soneh. The emissaries within Vanafichu, you see something greater than one might have noticed in the Megillah, and that's the focus of the Chiddush of the Nes, was Vanapichu. The Megillah started, it spans a tkuf of 13 years. It's a long time. And were it not for the Megillah, we wouldn't have joined the dots. Probably wouldn't have put together everything that happened at Ahasuerus' Suda. But Ahasuerus' Suda, we have Klal Yisrael attending the Suda. And because they attend the Suda, there's a regas, the Rebbein Shem's upset with Klal Yisrael. At that Suda, Haman makes a move. It seems Haman, in his plans, in his, the way he wanted to rise to power, he saw Vashti as a threat. Vashti had a certain strength, a certain heritage. She was the granddaughter of Ahasuerus, of Nebuchadnezzar. And she felt she was shayach to Malchus in a way that Ahasuerus wasn't. Haman wants Vashti out of the way. So when Vashti is disrespectful to the king, Haman steps in, Haman, and Haman has chiddush, Solomdish a chiddush Haman. You notice that Ahasuerus has to consult all the sorim. There's a whole range of people he has to consult. There's Yeshem Lifnei Amalchus, as Mepharshim explained, there was a whole Seder. Rabbi Leib Wittel recently described it as a democracy. And Takim, there's a system that's running. And Haman comes up with a Chiddush, and he says, the king should get rid of her. What happened? Yetzid var Malchus Lefanof. Gone. But what that tells us is, Haman's Chiddush was that normally, normal Sidrei HaMalchus, normal things that take place, even though the king wants to run them, there's a Seder. You can't just introduce a law. There's a parliament or there's a senate, and that has to go through the due process. But Yetzid Var Malchus Mufanov, when something is Negeah directly to the king, then the king can dictate that such a person should be removed, because it's directly personal to the king. What this tells us is that Haman had a plan. Haman wasn't just a guy sticking around. Haman was a brilliant man. And Haman had set things up in a way that he removed anybody who was disturbing his rise to power. And his ascent to power continues. And he gets greater and greater. Rav Bonov, Oshri. And he's established himself to the extent that he can speak to the king. The king removes his signet ring and gives it to Haman. Chiddush, this concept. That a king can transfer power to a commoner. Haman wasn't anything. Didn't have any connection to Malchus. A stammer person from the street Betzim, who's now risen, become one of the Sarei HaMelech, and the Melech has the power to give him this. Another one of Haman's Chiddushim. I'm sure somebody wrote a book at the time about political moves that he's got connections in the palace. You find the Chazal, he had his children there. His men were all over. And that's how he rises to the top, and he's so confident. And you sense that confidence when he's sick of Mordechai, wants to get rid of him. He's arranged for all the Eden to be killed. He's spoken to the king. He sent out letters, and the Malbim says, that the letters were sent out in two chalokim, two parts. There was an open letter and there was a hidden letter. Because Haman knew that there might be one or two Yidden who had a connection somewhere that he hadn't covered. And they would rub some palms and give a little bribes, and before you know it, the Yidden would have arranged lepers. So nobody knew about it. It was the letter that went out publicly was that there's a terrible nation or a terrible group, or that there's somebody who has to be killed on the 13th of Adar. Be ready. Have your swords sharpened, and we're going to go for them on the 13th of Adar. But it didn't say who it was. There was a sealed letter that was sent only to the leaders, only to the Sarim. And in that letter it said that the ones to go for are the Jews. So that way, Klal Yisrael won't know. Nobody will know. It'll be kept top secret. And therefore, the plans won't be abolished. And he had everything sorted, everything sealed, everything in place. His confidence at that point is he comes into the Chatzar HaMelech. This is the morning of... He's got that gallows hanging, and everyone in Shushan has seen that gallows, and they all know who it's for. It's waiting for Mordechai. He's got that already, and he comes, Leimer LaMelech. He comes to tell the king. What a chutzpah. He comes to tell the king that he's hanging Mordechai. He didn't come to ask. He's top of the world. Nothing can move him. And we, or Klausel at the time in Shushan, know that, sense that, and the despair, the natural despair, was a realization that the noose is so tight, there's no way out. Mordechai Yoda, Mordechai discovered the plan, Mordechai revealed it to Klal Yisrael, and that's how they knew there was a problem. But until that point, now suddenly we chab that it's too late. He's got everything in place, Haman, and he's in charge. The last hope that we had, which is that maybe Esther is still for the Jews, Esther's now inviting Haman to parties. And everybody knows that, it's palace news. The gossip is out. Esther's inviting Haman to the party, so we've lost any last hope we have. It looks like it's all over. And then the Ribbono Shel Olam turns everything around, and hipuch in Lashon HaKodesh means taking the same thing and switching it round. If somebody is coming to attack Reuven from the left, and Shimon comes from the side and destroys his enemy, that's Hatzalah. That's not hipuch. Hipuch is when the thing itself switches round. When Haman's inviting Esther, because he's trying to... when Esther inviting Haman is something so incredible in Haman's mind that he thinks this is another level and is closest to the king, and he tells his wife about how exciting it is. I'm the only one who Esther's brought to the palace, and that itself turns out to be exactly the opposite. He's building the gallows... For Mordechai, it's actually the gallows for him. Coming to the king to tell him about hanging Mordechai, sends him out leading the horse that leads to his mapala. The whole way the Ribbono Shel Olam sets it up, that fatal moment at the end of the Suda, when Esther turns round to the Melech and says, this fellow, Alpiteva, shouldn't face Haman at all. Haman's more likely to remove Esther than Esther is to depose Haman. He's got everything in place, and he'll make a move, he'll sort it out, he'll smooth talk Achashverosh. It could have been easy. But Haman makes a fatal error. At that point, the king is angry, he leaves, and Haman is neifel ala mitu asher Esther aleha, and he starts begging her for mercy. Besides, it was a desperate move. She's just announced that this man wants to destroy my nation. It's not a small disappointment she has in him. She feels that he's a threat to her life, and he turns to her to save him instead of turning to Achashverosh. But this brilliantly political person, Haman was a political animal, he was a person who was sensitive to nuance, to what things look like, to how they appear, and he didn't chap that he's been neifel al amita, what the king's got. It's something that he might have picked up, but he didn't. Because if you think back to how Haman entered this Suda, you think of what his day was like that morning. How he walked into the Chatzar HaMelech in the best of moods, feeling finally he's reached the solution to all his problems, he's going to get rid of Mordechai. And then they come, and he has to take Mordechai around the city, the bushes and bezionis are beyond description. Beyond, I mean, the prime minister and beyond is now leading his arch enemy around this, and then you've got the rubbish the garbage and the sewage that his own daughter pours on his head. He sees her committing suicide. He gets home and he's trying to clean himself up. Vayavhilu lahavias haman. And they start rushing him out. And when we're rushing, we make mistakes. When we're bebehala, and that's how the Rebbeinu Shem set it up, that he makes such a dumb move, and Charvona is there, who can point to the gallows and say, look at the gallows that Haman created for Mordechai Asher Diber Toiv al HaMelech. Leib Whitler just mentioned a beautiful gong. This is fascinating. We read the pasuk that Haman made the gallows for Mordechai, who spoke well about the king. So where's the comma? Mordechai, comma, Asher Diber Toiv al HaMelech. We understand it's referring to Mordechai. The Gaon says, there's another layer. Charvona says to Achashverosh, do you know that when Haman was building this gallows, he was heard muttering to himself, I'm making it for Mordechai, but Diber, Haman said, Toiv al HaMelech, this would suit the king. Aha, so he's also planning to hang the king. And all that to Luhu Alav. And where is Haman? He's not where he normally is. He's not in the king's chambers, where he's surrounded by advisors, by friends, by colleagues, by associates, by all the protection he normally has. He's in the private quarters of the king and the queen. He's come to Esther's Suda with Achashverosh. There's no one else there. The only person present is Charvona and a few Pashtim Shorosim who he doesn't know. To Luhu Alav, it's over in a moment. You look back and you suddenly chap, one second, what right does the king have to hang his prime minister? Oh yeah, that's the law that Haman instituted all the way back. Haman said, Vayoma Mamuchan, that if it's Yetzei Dvar Malchus, that if something that the king himself finds personally relates to him, then he can dictate what happens, and he suddenly becomes the ruler and doesn't need any senate, doesn't need any law. He can remove somebody who he feels is a threat. Everything Haman has set up switches, and instead of becoming our problem, becomes our solution. Instead of becoming something that's directed against Klal Yisrael, becomes something that's for Klal Yisrael. When the Pasuk tells us that the base Haman went to Mordechai, that base Haman was some palace. And Haman built it for Haman, right? And for Vashti, for Zeresh. It was for, yeah, and I'm sure that Zeresh slept into the tile shop to choose the tiles, and he was involved in choosing what marble would be on the floor. He'd invested in this bias and become a place that expressed the majesty of this great Tsar. And it's all built for Mordechai. Everything that seemed to be ra turns out to be toiv. Hippuch means that we suddenly understand that there's no stira. There's no ze le'umas ze. You know, there's two ways to win a dintira. You can have an enemy or an opponent or somebody or that person's fallen out with or sees as a threat. And you can force them. You can twist their arm and force them to give in. You call the police, take them to Besdin. But he still remains an enemy. The person themselves is still against us. So you've always got to bear in mind there's someone out there who's not your greatest friend. If we can win them round, that's a very different story. It's like sometimes you have a kasha, and you find a teretz, but you still have a kasha. It's a kasha with the teretz. When you really get to the bottom of it, and you don't have a kasha anymore, it's much more gishmak. The whole sugya starts to make sense. You manage to overcome an enemy, but the enemy's still there. You locked him up. But when the enemy himself makes peace with you, you sense there's a closeness. You sense there's a peace. When we left Mitzrayim, we were faced by a great enemy. As Klal Yisrael, living in Olam Hazeh, our enemy is the Seder called Sidrei HaTeva, nature. The laws of nature, the flow of nature, the fact that things seem so natural is that which really stands in the way of our Avodas Hashem. We wake up in the morning and we say Moedah Ani Lefanecha, but we don't always feel the gratitude for the Rebbeinu Shem giving back our neshama. That's what happens, we wake up. We eat and we say Hamitzi Lechem Min Haaretz, but we don't really feel Hamitzi Lechem Min Haaretz. We say it because we see that bread comes from, well, we know where bread comes from. It comes from the shop, right? And we know that the money that we have is money that we earned. We live in a mahalach of teva. The Rebbein Shem showed us that there's something more powerful than teva. There's nesim, there's dam, there's tzadeh, there's kinim, there's kriyas yamsuf. He brought us to Matan Torah, where there was a gilui neira. But that shows us that there's something greater than teva. Teva's down here. Nes is up there. That's the chiddush of Matan Torah. Maral says that Kof Aleim Har Kigigis doesn't just reflect a physical mountain. It reflects to a clarity that was so overwhelming, that was so overpowering, that it just took our breath away. It removed our bechira. When it's so clear that a Tosfos is going to give you Olam Haba, and a coffee is just a coffee, what type of nisayon is that? When it's so clear that when we rachem on a yid and we give to a yid, we're developing a closeness, a klal yisrael, that together going to bring Moshe. It's everything so clear. There's no nisayon anymore. That was the Kof Aleim Har Kigigis. It's a bit like the inspiration of Yom Kippur. Many people say that they make Kabbalahs in Yom Kippur, but Kabbalahs don't last. Kabbalahs don't work. And there's a certain yush that sets in, because people believe that you make Kabbalahs, you try, it doesn't work. It's sheker v'chozov. It's not true. Very, very rarely does a person make Kabbalah Yom Kippur that doesn't last. The Kabbalah lasts 100%. It's just, you have to remember the context of the Kabbalah. Ayid makes the Kabbalah when he's in Shul, Yom Kippur, in the middle of Ne'ilah. And you know what? It's solid. It's there in his heart, and it will work all the way through the year. You just have to keep him in Shul, in Ne'ilah. For that matter, his Kabbalah is 100%. It's 100%, nothing's changed. But he didn't make a Kabbalah for when he's in Shul, schmoozing with his friends at the end of Davening. And he's, that's a different story. At a kiddush, will I speak Lashon Hara? Ani lo yodea. In shuva, ani lo yodechish can Lashon Hara. And that clarity is chai v'kayo. Two things to be learned. One is that we can make Kabbalahs and they do last. The other is to make Kabbalahs that are more suitable to the situation we're going to be for the rest of the year. But the limitation of a Kabbalah of Yom Kippur is that when we have that inspiration, it's fine. But when it drops, the Moedah Rabbah lo yiraisa is that we were so inspired by the clarity of Har Sinai, the further we get from Har Sinai, the less mechayev it is. Because that's a lamaila dig inspiration. But sometimes we recognize things within the humdrum of day-to-day life, within the Seder Chaim, and we sense there there's a Ribbono Shel Olam. That's a different story. That's already Hakara, where the enemy itself has to admit. Where we see in Teva the Zerubin Shalom, where we spend time and we stop and we think about how things happen and we daven and we mispalal, not for Nisim, but that the Rebbein Shem should show us the Nisim Nistorim, that the Seder HaChayim is run the Teva Seno. Megillas Esther, when the Rebbein Shem is Megala the Esther, when we start to see behind the mask, we start to see through the dough of the krepel and find the meat inside. Within the pnim of Olam Hazeh, when we're eating a fleshiger suda, and this year we're going to be on our own, and we're going to be mischazik. We've got to mischazik in the simcha of dveikus b'Kodesh Baruch Hu, and that's the only simcha we're going to have. So Rabbi Weintraub Zecher Tzadik Livracha once said to us, he said, you know, the difference between a seder table in the most posh Yid's home and the Yid in the home of a gadol ador. It's so different, so different. One's a Pashto Yid, you're on a seder table, and one's a gadol ador. The difference between the Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur of a Pashto Yid and a gadol ador, such a difference. But they're both doing the same thing. At the seder table, the Pashto Yid is doing a seder, is being zechit yitzis mitzrayim. The Aruch Yid is doing it on a much higher level. Shavuos, the Pashto Yid, his Kabbalah Satira is more cheesecake than Kabbalah, but he's still busy with Kabbalah Satira and Shavuos. The grace of Tzaddik has a higher level of Kabbalah Satira, has a higher level of Shoni Yom Kippur. They're both dancing with the Torah. One's more pluralistic, one's less, but they're both dancing with the Torah. So when it comes to Purim, there's almost two Yom Tovs. The Yom Tov inside and the Yom Tov outside. The Yom Tov of Holiness and the Yom Tov of Simcha. We've been through a tough year. A year where the Ribbono Shel Olam has shaken us up. And he's made us focus so much more on areas that are so negeah to the Yom Tov of Purim. The Ribbono Shel Olam has shaken us up and shown us that he's in charge. The Koich Votzim Yodi that we all felt last year. The Im Yis Hashem, yeah? Im Yis Hashem. It's not Im Yis Hashem. It's Im Yirtze Hashem. Because we know that if he doesn't want, it don't happen. We can't fly, we can't travel, we can't meet, we can't... Business are open, business is a shop, we can't... We're Toli Badas Achirim. Everything's Im Yirtze Hashem. Has such a ring to it, such a clarity. There's such a sense of seeing Hashkocha Protis that we didn't have before. There's a realization that we need to build real closeness. We have to scrap this social distancing. It's a curse. It's nonsense. It's not relevant Purim. It's not relevant the rest of the year. It's a goyish musig that we must take out of our lives and cancel social distancing. It was an awful mistake. Physical distancing, of course. There's a pandemic. We've got to keep away from people because we could affect them. We could harm them. We could be harmed. But social distancing, Rachman al-Islam, we have to create as much social connection as we can, particularly Purim. We can't visit, we can't share sudas. Pick up a phone, make a Zoom phone call, find the cousin who's down, find the friends who are struggling. We have to build connection, but real connections. And with our own families at the Purim Suda, we'll suddenly discover that there's a closeness that we can have at home that we've forgotten really exists. And the Pnimius of being on our own and not relying on the current of the whole tzibur to carry us, on the mood of what's going on in shul, what's going on in the street. Purim is going to be ourselves. The Ribbono Shel Olam feels telling us to hebzach. And if I can finish, the parents who were so despondent before their children's chasna, when chasnas were still allowed, but only 30 people, and it was like, how on earth? Chasanim and Kalas, who were crying the night before. Shevabrochas, we only have Shevabrochas. 10 people, 15 people. And almost every single one of those parents and every single one of those bar mitzvah boys and every single Chasanim and Kalas came back and said, it was amazing, it was awesome. Because instead of the noise, there was pnimius, there was real connection. If we can do that at Chasna, we can do that at bar mitzvah. We can do that at Purim. And Bezus Hashem, this will be the most inspiring Purim that will bring us to a year that will, as it should be high, and if Mashiach doesn't come today or tomorrow, it'll inspire the year to come to be a Shana, Simcha, Teva, Shalom, Bracha, and Nachas.